Hi, I'm Katie.
I'm Lindsay.
Hi, I'm Chelsea.
I'm Philip, and this is
Hanging with My Chromies.
So guys, today we're going to talk about what organic means.
Organic is the chemistry of carbon.
Yes, it is, but we're talking about the other kind of organic. So in the US, EU, Canada, and Japan, organic standards are formulated and overseen by the government, which means that legislation is in place to ensure that certain things are, can be marked organic. But my question to you is, do you buy organic? And if so, what do you buy?
I buy it on accident sometimes.
Eggs.
Eggs?
Organic free range.
I buy, organic eggs. Mostly fruits or vegetables that don't really have a thick skin.
Why? Because it can penetrate the skin easier?
Yeah. So I don't know. I've just read that you don't, for bananas, you don't really have to buy organic bananas because they have a really thick outer, that's not a shell, peel skin. Yeah, where onions, for example, have a real papery skin. So it's a lot easier for chemicals to get into the vegetable that way.
Okay, well, I wanted to dig into this some more and find out, what does organic mean? What's truly organic, and what is just smart marketing that's happening across the United States? So let's get started on cracking the case of what's organic.
So what does organic mean, Chelsea?
Organic, in definition by the EPA, means that crops must be grown without the use of synthetic pesticides, bioengineered genes or GMOs, petroleum-based fertilizers, or sewage sludge-based fertilizers.
Mmm, my favorite.
How do we know if something's organic when we go to the store to buy it?
Oh, it's the more expensive one.
Typically, yes, organic products are more expensive, but they come with a USDA label that is either USDA organic or certified organic, that's a seal on the food. And that's labeling that you know is coming from an organically produced material, and that be either farm or meat. And that's because testing and certification goes into this process that is regulated by the USDA.
So I see a lot of things on the shelf when I'm going shopping that say organic. So I can trust that that is all correct?
No, it has to say USDA certified organic, not just a regular organic label. Now, if it says made with organic products, that means that a minimum 70% of the products that went into this process material were made and certified organic prior to going into the processing, but 30% of that material is not.
So that doesn't get the organic label or marking on the label.
It will have made with organic, but it will not have the USDA certified organic label.
How long does it take for a farmer to become organically certified?
Oh, I know this. I read it recently. So it takes 3 years for a farm to become certified organic. The first year, so they have to stop using all pesticides and artificial fertilizers and what have you. They can't irradiate the fruit either after picking, which is a sort of preservative. That was another thing. But 3 years, the first year the crop cannot be certified as organic. The second year, it's something like in transition or in conversion. And then it's after the third year of a crop rotation that it can then be certified as organic. The idea being that in that time, the soils have cleansed themselves, if you like, of all of the artificial pesticides or what have you that would have been added.
Do they do any testing during this as well? Because 3 years, not everything disappears in the groundwater or the dirt that's there. Should we even still, with the USDA label, trust that it's organic?
So there is testing that's done, and that is where the chromatography ties in, because they use gas chromatography as well as liquid chromatography to measure the levels of different pesticides within the materials, the soil, the air, the water. And even though they've waited 3 years, they're still going to test positive for these pesticides and fertilizers, because it takes that long for it to, it takes much longer than that for it to actually deplete from the soil. It's not something that just goes away within 3 years.
And you hear sometimes about conflicts between organic and inorganic farming, non-organic farming, where the farm next door may be spraying his crops and you get the blowover and mm-hmm. that can ruin their certification.
Yeah. And that's something that I think happens quite a bit because it's easy to disperse these products through the air. That's how they're sprayed mm-hmm. on plants. And so it's very easy for it to move from one area to another.
Similar to that GMO issue that's happening like north of us right now, where people are concerned if they want to be non-GMO and some neighboring crops are, and they're worried about like cross-pollination between the crops.
Yeah, that's a really good point. GMO, especially for corn, it outpopulates. And so a cornfield, you know, in one county can actually pollinate with a cornfield, you know, two counties over because it's the pollen is able to be picked up and carried so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it doesn't, you know, we think, oh, this is non-GMO. Actually, it probably is. And we've been genetically modifying crops since the beginning of agriculture. We crossbreed different things to get the characteristics of the fruit that we want. However, I do understand the concern that comes with having chemicals on fruits and vegetables that we eat and ingest every mm-hmm. day. So speaking of the history of agriculture, how long do you think people have been using pesticides to try and reduce weeds and insects killing their crops?
Mm, that's a good one.
A long time.
Yeah, a long time. I'd probably say like, I don't know, 500, 600.
Basically, since the beginning of agriculture, people have been looking for ways to keep pests out and grow their crops, you know, to their fullest bounty. And so the earliest known pesticide that I could find was that Romans would crush olive pits to produce an oil that was an insecticide. They not only did that, they also used sulfur-containing compounds and salts, as well as using heavy metals and salt.
Heavy metals.
Yes. Such as...
That's your inorganic farming.
Yeah. Sprinkle a bit of lead on your crop.
Mm-hmm. Well, lead would probably be preferable to arsenic and mercury.
How did the Roman Empire last so long?
I don't know.
It's crazy.
They did get taken down by their lead pipes, but...
They did. Making horses emperors. I think that was the tipping point. Supposedly it was because of all the lead poisoning in their brains. So I understand organic farming as it pertains to fruit and crops. What about animal farming? Because you don't spray them with pesticides or they generate the fertilizer. You don't fertilize them. So.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but the food that you feed those animals also has to be certified as organic. And then they can be vaccinated, but they mm-hmm. cannot have any injections of antibiotics or growth hormones. And so that's where the organic meat comes from, is not injecting the animal with some foreign chemical. However, vaccines are an acceptable way of managing the health care of the animal.
Just not the antibiotics. And...
Correct.
Okay.
This is the reason why when you go to the store and you see the separate section that says organic, everything is about twice the cost.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more effort that goes into it. All right, so pesticides were continued to be used from the Middle Ages up to the Victorian era. And the typical method of pest control were still removal, barriers, botanicals, and elemental salts. So again, those metallic salts. Mm-hmm. But within the 19th century began the dawn of manufactured chemical pesticides. This was when chemicals began to be extracted from their botanical sources and were purified in laboratories. Moving into the 20th century, synthetic chemicals started being used. Does anybody remember any chemicals that were used that are now no longer used?
DDT.
So I always, in researching this topic, I always thought that DDT and DEET were the same thing. They are not. So DEET is very safe and can be used as a mosquito repellent. DDT, not so much.
Is that what we denature antibodies with? Same chemical?
That's DTT.
Oh, thank you.
So DDT, or should I try to pronounce this?
Yes. This will be fun.
Go for it.
Dichlorodiphenyltrichloroethane.
That's disappointingly good.
It was first prepared by an Austrian chemist in the late 1800s, but the insecticidal properties were not discovered until 1939, which is what led to a Nobel Prize award. It was used as a pesticide and actually really helped the war effort because it came out right before we entered World War II. So it helped with the boom of agricultural growth and yield and things like that to be able to ship to the soldiers overseas. At the time, it was thought that it was a broad-spectrum insecticide with very low toxicity to mammals. It was also very inexpensive to produce and very easy to apply to large area, but because it was insoluble, it was not washed away by weather. And I thought that was a really good idea.
That sounds like a horrible idea.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until 1962, whenever Rachel Carson, a marine biologist, published Silent Spring, a book that highlighted the effects of the pesticides on the environment, specifically DDT. And it was because of this book that really kind of educated the public as well as the EPA. And DDT was removed from usage by the EPA in 1972.
So what did happen to it all?
Despite there being worldwide removal of DDT, two countries didn't stop using it until 2008. Can anyone think of other pesticides that are in the news?
Roundup.
Yep. Do you know when Roundup was originally made? The chemical, the insecticide.
Before I was made.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Does anyone know why it's such a successful product and why it's being used across the globe?
No.
Wasn't it a solution to some other bad pesticide they were using and this was like their better option that they came up with?
In terms of the development of the pesticide, yes, but the reason that it became so widely used is because we can genetically modify the crops now so that the pesticide actually isn't harmful to the plant. So they have an alternative genetic pathway to be able to produce the aromatic amino acids, whereas weeds and, you know, plants that are not wanted are killed by the pesticide. And speaking of the genetically modified plants, so that's not just corn, as what I thought. It is actually both soybeans, cotton. It also has canola and sugar beet are all glyphosate resistant. Can you guess out of the entire percentage of soybeans that are generated in the U.S., what percentage is genetically modified to be Roundup resistant?
Oh, I imagine it's huge.
95%.
Yeah, up there somewhere.
Yep, 93%.
Wow.
And that was in 2010, so it might be higher now.
Right.
Has anyone heard about this glyphosate being in the news recently?
I heard the initial concern was that there was some link to, I think, cancer. But now it's questionable whether like that's statistically relevant data or not. And if they can find a true like scientific link between the two is what is still being studied.
You're right on, Katie. There's recently been a lawsuit in the news about a man here in California who was using Roundup. He was doing the landscaping around, I believe it was a school or a government building. And then he developed lymphoma. And I think he just won a lawsuit against them for being exposed to glyphosate or being exposed to Roundup while he was a landscaper.
Yeah, finding the company that produces the glyphosate at fault and penalizing them with a $250 million penalty and then an additional $39 million just for himself. So his total award in the original judgment was $289 million.
Wow.
The real controversy here is the fact that regulatory agencies are actually conflicting in their assessment of glyphosate and its carcinogenic properties. So the U.S. EPA states that glyphosate is not likely to be carcinogenic to humans. The International Agency for Cancer Research says that it probably contributes to cancer. The European Food Safety Authority says it's unlikely to pose a carcinogenic threat, meaning that the U.S. and Europe, or the EU, say that it's not likely, but the International Agency for Research on Cancer says that it probably contributes to cancer.
So despite all of everything going on with the lawsuit, it seems like the market is still moving towards testing for glyphosate in agriculture, right?
That's correct. So there is still ongoing research that's being done. And there are some theories on why these agencies came to different conclusions. One is the fact that the U.S. EPA has actually had a larger amount of data, but that data was actually provided by the manufacturer of the chemical.
Mm.
So while it was a lot of research, it's hard for the public to accept because unfortunately, it's from a biased source.
Right.
Whereas the IARC had a smaller data set, but it was from a less biased source. The other point that I have about this is the fact that a lot of the research that has been done has been on glyphosate by itself. It is not necessarily done in conjunction with the surfactants or detergents that are actually within Roundup. So I think at this point there needs to be more studies done about, you know, how dangerous this chemical by itself or in the Roundup form actually is.
Right, and more independent studies.
More independent. That being said, glyphosate is around us all the time. So 28 kids' cereals, like the sugary stuff that I would eat on Saturday mornings and watch cartoons, were tested. And guess how many tested positive for glyphosate?
28.
Yep, 28 out of 28. And 26 out of 28 were at fairly high levels, meaning that we are probably eating this constantly in our processed food.
Mm-hmm. Are there organic cereals?
So yes, there are organic cereals that you can get, but I do think more research needs to be done since we are ingesting this constantly.
Right. Yeah, there's so much exposure from so many sources by the sounds of it.
What kind of techniques are they using to test this?
There's lots of different techniques that are being used, primarily gas chromatography and LC-MS. But what I find interesting is that a lot of the research that's going on is actually going back to samples that were taken in the mid and late 90s and looking at the glyphosate levels at that point in time, whenever Roundup and these genetically modified organisms were new, and they are still capable of being able to test and detect the glyphosate in the samples they expect to have glyphosate in them. In terms of how they actually test for glyphosate in water is using liquid chromatography and using an Amonex column. And so that's done all throughout the U.S. and is a very common technique. Okay, so besides pesticides, what other benefits do you think people consider when purchasing organic?
I think there's the myth that it's more nutritious and more tasty, but I don't think there's any data that supports that.
That's correct. Although I do find that homegrown tomatoes do taste different than tomatoes that you buy at the store. In testing the nutritional value of organic versus non-organic, there has not been any significant difference in the nutrition.
Yeah, homegrown tomatoes are the best.
I think if it became less cost prohibitive and more, if I had more confidence as a consumer that, you know, maybe I could look for this USDA label and mm-hmm. that I knew that I was truly getting something organic. If there was something like maybe a meat product where we knew there was some health effect of the pesticides, then that would push me more. But right now it seems like there's a little bit of mistrust in the whole organic thing going on. And then that along with the marketing and the higher cost associated with it makes me a little less interested.
Yeah, I think there's too much pseudoscience in the marketing, isn't there? Claiming the benefits of organics.
Lindsay,
I just buy organic because, like Philip said, to me, organic strawberries taste better. So I buy it because of the taste. And since the jury's still out on if pesticides are, you know, really that harmful or not, I just sometimes like to buy organic just to be, I don't know, on the safe side, if I can say.
They are to the honeybees.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I'm helping the honeybees.
So one other reason that I didn't think about until researching this topic was the fact that biosustainable farming, which also produces organic produce, is actually lessening the environmental impact that large corporation farming can have. That seems to be one of the other contributing factors to people purchasing organic produce.
Yeah. I think if you're buying organic, it doesn't have the preservatives, so it's farmed to plate quicker.
So there is actually a list of fruits and vegetables where the organic label matters most. And I found that interesting, but it does coincide with what Lindsay was saying, that a produce that has a thinner skin is actually, these are the ones that are on the list. So apples, sweet bell peppers, cucumbers, celery, potatoes, grapes, tomatoes, summer squash, peaches, spinach, strawberries, and hot peppers are where people should be focusing their organic purchases. The reason for this is because these are the produce that test the highest in pesticides compared to other produce.
It's interesting because it's also, unfortunately, all different produce that you eat without peeling.
Yep.
So it's not like an orange or a banana where you remove that outside layer.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere strawberries and spinach are amongst the dirtiest produce that you get in the supermarkets.
Oh man, gotta upgrade my salad spinner.
And then there's a list of fruits and vegetables that you don't need to buy organic. These are known as the Clean 15, and these conventionally grown fruits and vegetables are generally low in pesticides.
I just thought the Clean 15 is like the best thing I've ever heard.
Do tell.
Okay, so asparagus, avocados, mushrooms, cabbage, sweet corn, eggplant, kiwi, mango, onion, papaya, pineapple, sweet peas that are frozen, sweet potatoes, grapefruit, and cantaloupe.
The Fantastic 15 are my favorite of the produce groups anyways.
It seems a random selection. Why cantaloupe and not honeydew or water?
I don't know. All I can say is that
I'm also curious to see why asparagus is on there, because you don't peel asparagus. You just
chop it and go.
Because yeah. It's delicious.
Organic produce and meat are tested and regulated by the USDA, albeit the health benefits for purchasing these products is still being studied. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Give us a like or a share. And thanks for hanging with us.
This podcast is an original creation of Bio-Rad Laboratories. Bio-Rad is a trademark of Bio-Rad Laboratories Incorporated. All trademarks mentioned herein are the property of their respective owner.